We're the Mario Brothers, and plumbing's a game. We're not like the others who get all the fame. If your sink is in trouble, you can call us on the double. We're faster than the others, you'll be hooked on the brothers. So hang on to your seat, get ready for adventure and remarkable feats.
Greetings, paisanos, and welcome to Mr. Sledge's Neighborhood, the red-headed stepchild of the Quarter Nerds family of podcasts. Take your shoes off and stay a while. There's beer in the fridge and minis on the table. So kick back, open your ear holes, and let me take you on an audio adventure. But first, a word from our sponsor.
No little cinnamon gum freshens breath longer than Big Red.
Do you need an excuse to slip the tongue to your significant other?
So kiss a little longer, stay close a little longer, hold tight a little longer, longer with Big Red.
Tired of having to cut your makeout sessions short? If you chew our thin piece of slightly flavored putty, the opposite sex will surely moisten to your advances.
Your fresh breath goes on and on. While you chew it, say goodbye a little longer. Make it last a little longer. Give your breath long-lasting freshness with Big Red.
Actual flavor lasts about 65 seconds.
And now, the news.
In what is old is again now new news, the NES Classic lived a short life despite almost instantly becoming a smash hit success. Nintendo's mini version of its classic 8-bit console only made it through one holiday season, and hardly ever actually landed on a retailer shelf, before the company decided to pull the plug on production. Now the new rumor suggests that a follow-up to the retro console may be in the works, the SNES Mini. According to some unnamed source close to the company that reported to Eurogamer, the SNES Mini would release in the time for the 2017 holiday season, possibly following the same pattern of the NES Classic. The rumored console would also work similarly to the NES Classic, with a plug-and-play model and an array of pre-installed, ready-to-play games. The sources didn't say which games could be included, but Nintendo has several top sellers from the original SNES to choose from, including The Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past, Donkey Kong Country, Super Mario World, Star Fox, and Earthbound. Nintendo has not commented on the rumor, so at the moment, it's all speculation. E3 is right around the corner, so it's possible that, if a report is indeed true, we'll find out more in the expo in June. Now, I was highly critical of the NES Classic. I just don't understand some of the design elements like QWERTY controllers, which were too short, a limited library of games, and, well, just the very concept. Nintendo actually offered all of these games over a virtual console, like, say, on the Switch, for instance, that would mitigate the need for another hunk of plastic that has a very limited functionality. This re-release of retro console stick would be ridiculous if it wasn't for all the fistfuls of money nostalgic fans will hand over to Nintendo. Seriously, you could fit 10,000 original 8-bit or 16-bit games on something as low-powered as the Switch, and that has better controls. I know I've said this before, but I'll say it again. If you want to play NES games the same way you did back in the 80s, then buy an original NES and get the cartridges. After a week, the novelty will wear off, but you'll still have a collectible as a result.
Hey, it's me, Zelda.
Oh yeah, I almost forgot. After saving the Triforce from evil, the hero gets his reward. Ow!
Don't you ever whistle at me again!
I mean, never whistle again, period.
Don't you ever clean in here?
Excuse me, princess.
And never take stop tips from the podcast news. Asmodee, parent company of Asmodee North America and Fantasy Flight Games, just blew the doors off cash registers in 2016. Asmodee's parent company is a French investment company, Eurozeo. In 2016, Asmodee posted revenue of 377.2 million euros. That's 404 million U.S. dollars to you and me. That's up 39.5%. That is huge. International activities now represent 75% of the group's revenue, particularly in the U.S. and the U.K. The year was marked by a particularly robust performance in the card segment, driven by Pokemon, which benefited from the favorable trends of the group's European countries. The group's EBITDA totaled 65.2 million euros, resulting in 17.3% margin. Yeah, that's huge. The growth of Asmodee is phenomenal. They've exceeded Games Workshop's gross sales in 2015 and just blew past them in 2016. Here's the baseline revenue numbers of both companies to compare. Asmodee, $404.6 million U.S. dollars. Games Workshop, $151.2 U.S. dollars. Asmodee is carrying quite a lot of debt, however, at $223.6 million, and is continuing the strategy of acquiring companies. In this last year, they bought Heidelberger, Millennium, and Edge, a set of publishers and distributors in Europe. Still, though, for the last few years, Games Workshop has been relatively flat on gross sales, while Asmodee is now averaging 20 to 40% growth a year. Unless you're a stockholder. Because holy hell, Games Workshop has been on a tear for the last 6 months. Eurasia's stock is up a healthy 10% over the past year, but Games Workshop is up about 120%. So yeah, use that information as you see fit. Just remember, I told you not to take advice from me.
Oh! Ta-da! Saved you again! Kiss me.
I was just going to.
This always happens!
This is the first time in years I can't wait for E3 news. Now, I make no bones about the fact that I'm a bit of a Microsoft homer. It's not that I dislike Sony or Nintendo. Hell, they've taken quite a bit of my money over the years, from poorly designed Vios and Game Boy Micros, both which I actually loved, to the new PS4 Pro and Nintendo Switch. But Microsoft figured out first that gaming systems should have hard drives, that a stable network was required for multiplayer, and that cross-platform ownership of digital media had potential. I bought in early, and I haven't left, which some might call the sunk cost fallacy, but I prefer to think of it as an investment into living room R&D. A bunch of new information has come out about Project Scorpio over the past week as Microsoft keeps dribbling out the details. They are future-proofing the box in some great ways, including one I will want to talk about, using HDMI 2.1. You don't want me to get into the nitty-gritty details, do you? Wait, you do? Is that why I'm here? Okay then! Now, unless you have a very expensive computer monitor right now, you don't have HDMI 2.1. No TV has it yet, and won't until this fall. Just in time for the release of the Scorpio for holiday shoppers. HDMI 2.1 was just announced this past January, and it improves gaming in multiple ways. HDMI 2.1 added support for Dynamic HDR, which is dynamic metadata that allows for changes on scene-by-scene or frame-by-frame basis. It'll also support higher resolutions and higher refresh rates, which will include 4K at 120Hz, 8K at 120Hz, to a maximum resolution of 10K at 120Hz. Now this comes at a cost. For video resolutions and refresh rates up to and including 4K at 60Hz, the Dynamic HDR, Game Mode VRR, and EARC features are supported with existing HDMI cables. But if you want to go higher than that, say to 4K at 120Hz or 8K at 60Hz, you're going to have to get a new 48G cable and expect that to cost a bit. The increase in maximum bandwidth is achieved by raising the lane speed from 6 gigabits a second to 12 gigabits a second and increasing the number of AV data lanes from 3 to 4, i.e. using 4 lanes to carry data. The data lane runs in an inverted clock mode and embeds the clock signal itself. This allows the clock lane to be used for data in addition for existing 3 data lanes. What this effectively means that if you have a TV with HDMI 2.1 and a device that supports HDMI 2.1 that's sending a signal, and you have a new HDMI 2.1 cable carrying that signal, then motion blur should be a thing of the past at frequencies of 120Hz and below, at 8K resolution and under. This has always been a problem for high-resolution gaming, even for those with state-of-the-art televisions. And it will be for most people for some time, because this shit will be expensive.
Don't you ever do that again without telling me!
Well, excuse me, princess!
I finally got a new phone reviews. I got my new Galaxy S8 today, and it is fantastic. I will review the VR portion after this, but for now, I will say the following. If you are an Android user and you need a new phone, get this. If you are an Apple user, I'm sorry, man, we are just better than you. If you are a Windows Phone user, Microsoft is canceling support for their phones starting April 25th. So if you had hoped the Surface Phone by now, come back to Android. Now, a lot can be said about this phone. It's the fastest combination of processors around. It has an amazing screen with almost no bevel. It will make you breakfast in bed. But here are some quick tips about maximizing your use of this phone. Shrink the screen size for easier use. You can shrink the screen size in the Galaxy S8 by using so-called one-handed mode, but you need to turn it on. First, go to Settings, Advanced Features, One-Handed Mode, and toggle it on. Select either Gesture or Button to enable quick access. Once active, One-Handed Mode minimizes the active area of the screen so that it's much easier to reach apps and other items that would otherwise require that hand. It is another powerful use of the Galaxy S8. And required for the S8 Plus if you're going to use it in one hand. Download large files even faster. Samsung includes a technology called Download Booster that can help increase the download speed of large files, like movies, using wireless and Wi-Fi technologies. It is off by default. You can turn it on by going to Settings, Connections, More Connection Settings, and then toggling Download Booster on. Enable Wi-Fi calling. This is super important for me. Wi-Fi calling can be a convenient if you don't have a good cell phone coverage at home, which I don't, or in the office. If you turn it on by going to Settings, Connections, More Connection Settings, toggling it in the Wi-Fi calling to on. Some carriers like AT&T and T-Mobile will sometimes walk you through this step during setup. Say cheese again. Samsung left this feature off by default for some reason, but you can turn on voice controls right in the camera settings. When it's on, just say cheese, smile, capture, shoot, to snap a photo. You can also say record video to start filming. You can shop for items with Bixby. It still needs some work, but Samsung's new Bixby assistant can be pretty helpful. You can use it for image search or for searching for items to buy. Just tap the Bixby button inside the camera settings and point it at an object. Performance can be a bit hit or miss, but we bet Samsung improves this over time. I will still download Cortana, but you know, this is new, so I'm going to try it.
Phew, that was a tight spot.
Come on, stop sitting down on the job.
Well, excuse me again, princess.
And finally, the Wheel of Destiny will take a week off because I angered it by not completing the rhyme last week. So I'm going to review the new Oculus Gear VR that came out with the Galaxy S6. Here's a quick breakdown. If you compare it to the Google Daydream, which is what came out with the Pixel last year, this is miles better. While Daydream forces developers to use motion controller as its main input, Oculus is adding its motion controller to existing methods of input. On the Gear VR, there's head gaze, the headset's touchpad, and a full-size Bluetooth gamepad that you can use to interact with the virtual world, all offered alongside the new motion controller. This makes a total of four ways that you can now interact with the Gear VR. The controller takes two AAA batteries, which I guess is okay because if you made it a lithium-ion rechargeable, it might have upped the cost. The new Gear VR controller maps all the headset's buttons onto it, including the touchpad, volume, home, and back buttons. The controller's touchpad can be pressed down too, which functions like a tap on the touchpad on the side of the headset. So the idea is that in apps that support the new controller, you can save some energy by not tapping the headset all the time, while conveniently pointing the controller at buttons or objects in the virtual world and pulling the trigger with your index finger in order to interact with it. You can also switch hands with the controller, meaning that lefties can feel just at home with this technology as the rest of us normal people. The S8 phone eventually got warm as I used it, but I encountered no overheating. Booted up just took seconds, and switching apps is fairly snappy. As far as games, well, there's 20 available, but I will review them at a later date. For now, be content with the fact that for the very first time, I'm beginning to warm up to the idea of VR becoming commonplace. I guess that might be because I got a free headset and controller. But it's still something I no longer feel is destined to be a niche fad. Now, if only PlayStation VR could get some new games.
Good to have you back, princess. Kiss me.
No, I just remembered. This is all your fault.
My fault?
Yes! If you hadn't been trying to scare me with those fake moblins, this never would have happened!
Well, excuse me, princess!
That's all I got for this week's Mr. Sledge's Neighborhood. Check out our Patreon page and donate money, and I'll send you a sexy picture of Ben. Just don't tell him you got it from me. I'm Kevin, informing you if you can't beat them, you should play anyway, because it's all about having fun, you competitive dickweed. Bye!